Every day I'm hustling. 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 Every day I'm. Every day I'm. Every day I'm hustling.
Hey guys, welcome back to Jules on the Hustle. I hope everyone had a nice weekend and having a nice start to their week. Last week was a bit crazy for me. I started to get sick around Tuesday, Wednesday. I was getting a sore throat. I was getting a headache. I felt tired. I had chills. I'm not really sure if I was imagining it with the COVID, just nervous and anxious, but I just did not want to expose my parents to anything I had. So I actually ended up getting a COVID test Wednesday morning, which was, really stressful. Not really the test itself, but just not knowing what was going on. I do still go to the gym. I do some outdoor dining sometimes, but luckily my test came back negative. I am feeling better, all is well, but I was super nervous, super anxious. I decide I'm going to stop going to the gym, which is going to be super tough. I love Orange Theory, so it's definitely a disappointment, but I'll have to stay disciplined and on top of my workouts at home. But enough about me. Let's move on to our special guest of the week. Luiza Stefani from Brazil is going to be joining us. Career high 32 in doubles. This year, she was a U.S. Open quarter finalist. As a junior, she was ranked number 10. That was her career high. And when she played at Pepperdine, she was ranked as high as number 2 ITA. So it'll be really interesting to have a predominantly doubles player on the podcast. I haven't done that yet. She does play singles, but has been just thriving in doubles. I want to hear what she has to say about the Australian Open coming up, how, the main draw was supposed to start January 18th, but it's going to be pushed back 3 weeks. Players internationally are not allowed to come to Australia until January 15th. So there will be no WTA warm-up tournament. How will she cope with that? What are her thoughts? You're going to be jumping into the next season with a grand slam. So that's definitely stressful. Usually players like to warm up, get those little kinks and rust off after, your off season, preseason, especially with, this year being a COVID year, not much match play. So it'll be interesting to see what she has to say about that. Also, I just want to hear her take. A lot of times college players or players, they transition most comfortably out of college just playing doubles. And I can see that in her. I played against her a few times in doubles. She has a lovely serve and volley, a great kick serve. I want to get her take. What makes her such a good doubles player? But then you have players like Serena, Sabalenka, Elise Mertens that can just thrive in both singles and doubles. So why are they able to, dominate so much in singles and doubles, whereas some are just more about the doubles? Is it like that college environment that gets you into that spirit of having a teammate? I just want to hear all that good stuff from her. Get the tea, spill the tea. But let's get started, guys. Let's hear from Luiza. So Luiza, you're here with me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Of course.
I'm excited to catch up.
Yes, it's been too long. You're in Brazil, you said, right?
Yeah, I'm in São Paulo, my home country, home city. It's nice to be back for a little bit.
Yeah, how's the COVID there?
What?
How's the COVID over there?
Oh, it's getting bad again. It's getting worse. I think we had elections, so I think we didn't hear much about the cases, but after election was over again, cases started spiking up. And São Paulo is a big city where I'm from, so it's kind of tough because everything was open. So I think people started taking it, letting it go a little bit. And now it's starting to spike up. But then things started to shut down earlier and we're going back to, I think, yellow zone. So I guess it's the same as everywhere. Just got to be careful. because it's a big city, it's hard to control everything. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll get better soon.
Yeah, exactly. We're the same in New York. You know, things are getting bad again. And it's crazy because it's worse right now in New York than it was like in March and April at the beginning. But it doesn't feel like I hate to say it, it doesn't feel as like scary, which is so bad to admit, which is a problem because it should feel scary. And while I'm being safe and everything and not going out much, I'm concerned that maybe people won't take it as seriously. So that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing here.
Yeah. So how is it? Is it affecting your training at all, your preseason training?
Yeah, it did quite a bit because I'm usually back in the States. I'm usually back training at Satterbrook in Tampa. And so since I got back from Europe, the Euro trip, I just stayed here. I would be able to go back, but I think it would be a bit tough. And I spent a lot of time in the state of COVID because I got there in February, at the end of February, to play the tournaments in March. And I ended up staying all the way through September, beginning of September, before I went to Europe. So because I stayed for so long, I decided to stay in Brazil for a little, just because of normal immigration situation, visa and quarantine in Mexico and all of those. Maybe I would be able to waive that, but I mean, decided to stay home for a bit, stay with the family. I haven't been back in Brazil for this long in a while. So in one way, it was a bummer because I love doing off season there, but in another way, it's nice to be home and do something different, I guess, like be home with the family and see other players from Brazil that I haven't seen before and haven't seen in a while, and just different training. But
yeah, totally. And despite COVID, I see you've been competing a lot over the past few months, so it's nice to see you're out there. So how long have you been doing your preseason training so far?
So honestly, this is my first day. I just started because I had a few setbacks. It took me a little while. I was supposed to start end of November. And then last week, two weeks ago, I got all four of my wisdom teeth out removed. And so that made me stop for a little bit. And I had to rest and just couldn't do much, really. And it was very swollen, still a little swollen on the left side. But now it's much better. So I had to take it easy. I was just doing a lot of physio, a lot of very mild, easy stuff, but I couldn't do like really much physical stuff.
Well, congratulations on finishing that. Congratulations on finishing that wisdom teeth extraction. That's not fun. What's interesting, you know, with tennis players, we get one off season and like you try to put all your off season, that's like 10 days, and you try to put all your doctor's appointments in there. And even though it's supposed to be rest and fun, it's like, you know, you have to catch up on your health. So it's like there's really no off season. It's just always on the move, always doing something. It's crazy.
Exactly. And especially being in Brazil, I just try to get everything done as much as possible so I don't have to worry about it during the year, or at least don't have to worry about it until I do have to worry about it. Like, exactly like you said, off season, it's almost like catching up on all doctor's appointments and all checkups and everything.
100%.
At least now it's done with. It's tough a couple of days or 2 weeks, but now I'm back.
So, that's right. So, Louisa, this podcast is called Jewels on the Hustle. Would you say you're a hustler?
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely.
In some ways, yeah. Yeah, being a tennis player, I think just any athlete is a hustler. We're all hustling out there, aren't we?
Yes, it's not a trick question. I know you're a hustler. What would you say drives and motivates your hustle?
I think the main thing is my passion to reach my goals, my will to reach my dreams, to literally meet my goals, to enjoy what I'm doing, to literally live
That'll
the
do
life
it.
To the fullest.
Regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets. I love it.
All right. So are you headed to Australia? Is that your plan?
Yeah, that's my plan.
So the latest is the Australian Open is now pushed back 3 weeks to let, you know, the players have a 2-week quarantine. Is that what you heard?
Yeah. So I think we're aiming at playing the Aussie Open on the 8th of February. We need to get there by the 17th of January to do quarantine. We'll be allowed to practice and stuff for, I think, 5 hours a day, unless they change the rules. But that's the latest. And I think there will be one lead-up tournament as well. I just haven't, yeah.
Oh, I was not aware that there would be a lead-up tournament. My next question was going to be, how would you feel about not having the lead-up? But I guess now it's, how does it feel to have a lead-up?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I haven't been too much worried about the Aussie Open because they've been so confident about making sure everybody gets there, about quarantine. And it's tricky because they're making very last-minute decisions. So it's tough for the tournament as well. But I'm glad they managed to put a lead-up tournament to give us time, especially the 2 weeks quarantine. Even if we can practice, it's going to be different. It will be most of the time we'll be at the hotel room, so we'll need to adapt. But I mean, I'm just glad we'll be able to practice before and then play one tournament and then go straight into it. I'm not sure if they'll have qualies though. I mean, it doesn't affect me too much.
Right.
I mean, at all. But that's something I haven't heard about it yet. But I'm excited. It looks like we'll have a good tour. I'm just not sure what's going to happen after that. I know there'll be a few tournaments in Aussie, which is good news.
That is good news.
Concerned about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you would have felt about not having a warm-up tournament going into your first tournament and Grand Slam of the year. How would that feel to you?
That would be weird, different. But I think I'd rather have it happen than not having it at all without a lead-up. Even without a lead-up, it would be better than not having it at all. So yeah. I think everything can change still. I'm very glad and happy they made such decisions, or they're trying to work it out the way it will. But I wouldn't be surprised if things change, I don't know, one next day, tomorrow, or 2 weeks from now, or who knows. I'm just hoping everything will work out. But I'm just prepared for whatever happens, I guess. So if there's a lead-up tournament, even better. And if there isn't, we'll just work with what we were given. We'll see.
Yeah, there seems like there's new news coming out almost like every week. Do you think that any of these changes or adjustments favor the Aussies at all? Knowing, you know, the Australians know where they're going to be and how they're going to train before the Australian Open. Do you think it's an advantage to them?
Well, in some way, it's better for them that they are already there. They're the home players, so I think that's already an advantage. But at the same time, it's nothing we can do about it. I think they're giving us a chance to get there before and practice on site, even during quarantine. I think if we weren't allowed to practice, then yeah, that would be
huge.
Exactly. But since we're all able to practice there, it's the same as every other year. They're usually there during off season, I think most. So it's not much different, I think.
Now these are valid points. So I want to dive into, you're playing some singles, but obviously mainly the doubles. I saw you're playing a lot of singles, but obviously in the Australian Open, you're going to play the main draw of doubles. How are you enjoying just dominating the doubles court?
Dominating. I love it. I mean, I love last year and a half has been really fun. And on tour, especially, I made a tough decision last year to just go more towards the doubles life just because of ranking, basically. I had a big ranking gap. I wasn't doing so well in singles. So it just worked out that way that I would start playing more doubles. And I'm lucky it's been going great. I've been playing with Haley too. So it's fun to have someone who I enjoy spending time with off court as well. Someone we can work hard on the court, improve. And
I like, we have a good chemistry on court, off court, so that's been fun. And I think every tournament pretty much has been new. So I think when I first started, everything is new. I'm going to new places, new tournaments. So it's pretty much everything is exciting. And I do miss singles. I'm hoping next year I'll be able to play some more. But I, so far, so good. No complaints. I'm really enjoying this.
Well, that's great to hear that you're enjoying it. For people that don't know, Louisa is playing with Haley Carter. So just in case you didn't know who Haley was. So a lot of times you see players transition from college tennis most comfortably into doubles. Do you think your domination in doubles, you learned a lot of the skills in college, or was it something you always had?
I think I've always done better in doubles. My game style naturally suits the doubles court. So I think for me, it's a combination. I guess going to college helped play more doubles or keep practicing more doubles all the time. Whereas sometimes in juniors, we didn't really. But since juniors, I've always had better results in doubles. And like I said, I think it just comes more naturally to me. And singles a bit more of a hustle. But in college, I actually did better in singles. I had better results in singles. So I don't know if I can attribute it to it, but it definitely helped some for sure.
Yeah, Louisa, you were ranked, what, 2 in the ITA in college tennis?
Yeah,
there you go.
2 my freshman year.
Freshman year. So, I mean, you have it both. Some people don't understand how different doubles and singles are. Like, not the players, of course, but maybe the fans or the outsiders. What do you think the biggest differences are and why it's difficult to maybe be really good at both?
Right. Well, the main difference, obviously, would be a lot shorter points or a lot more quickness and game at the net. And I think for me, that's the biggest difference. I like playing at the net. And in doubles, I just got to cover half court to get there. And in singles, you got to maybe work the point a lot more and cover the court, more side-to-side movement. And I think the aspect that helps someone do well in both, obviously, being a solid baseliner, you can be a great doubles player because you can help your partner if someone is good at the net, and that's the main thing in singles. But in doubles, for example, for me, I think returning a lot from the same side, a lot of repetitions, a lot of transition into the net, a lot of placement on the serve, I think all those skills can help you do better in singles as well. So because they're both two very different games, even though it's tennis,
right,
I think both singles you can learn a lot and improve a lot to help you in doubles, and in doubles you can repeat a lot of things and that will help you in your singles games. So I'm using doubles, and hopefully that will help me with my singles game and start playing more. And I think that's maybe why a lot of singles players do well in doubles and should choose to play doubles too.
Absolutely.
They both help each other.
And what's great about doubles is, you know, when you lose singles, you have an opportunity to get another match in. However, if I did a week of just doubles, or I went further in doubles and then just played singles the next week, sometimes I had a hard time going from, you know, a smaller court in doubles to a full court in singles. Like, for me, like, of course you go cross court down the line in doubles, but it's just a whole new animal when you're in singles. You have to open up the court. It's like all you, no doubles partner. So I did feel mentally a little challenged when I played both, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I haven't played both in a while, I'm not gonna lie.
Uh-huh.
Because I've been playing mainly doubles, and the ones I played in singles, I only played singles, or I played maybe one match in singles. But I think it's more adapting. But it's in singles, you obviously need to be fitter to fit enough to run around the court and play those running shots. But you can really use the doubles half court to find placement, to use the full court to hit short angles, to hit lobs, to hit down the line return, middle return, cross court return. You can do anything on the doubles court that I still think it will help in the singles game. It's more about adding both together and making sure once you do play doubles, if I want to start playing singles again, you keep practicing points on the full court, or you still use your time and manage your time that you can do both, and also take care of your body so you're not overdoing it.
But yeah,
I think it's just a matter of really managing and trying to get the best of both worlds.
Well, two players on the WTA Tour that take advantage of both, I'm sure you can think of off the top of your head, but Mertens and Sabalenka. How do you think they're able to, you know, so be so dominant in both singles and doubles?
I mean, they're great players. I think that's the basic answer. They do the basics. They do everything really well. And so that helps them in doubles too. In singles, they're powerful hitters from the back. They're solid. They're steady. They also have steady returns, good serve. And then they do a good job at the net too. I think they're pretty complete. And then they complete each other on the doubles court too, because being so solid from the back, it puts pressure on you to serve better when they are making maybe all the returns, or they're being aggressive on the returns. And then on their serve, they're choosing good placements or power. And I think it's just a mix of complementing each other well and covering the court. And so you need to force yourself to find a hole or to break them down. And I think when you have two great players playing together in doubles, that's tough to compete against. And I think that's what makes them a good team and have some success. And in singles, same thing. Like I said, they have great qualities as players, so they make themselves hard to beat.
That's a great answer. Yeah. A lot
being confident too helps.
Yes,
they've done so well, and they keep consistently doing well. So, yeah,
that leads to confidence. A lot of, you know, the struggle is finding a partner that really complements you. I know you've played with many different players. Would you say you and Haley are, you know, pretty permanent at this point?
Yeah. I mean, since we started playing together last year, I think we started last October. And from the first practice, first match, we clicked really well. And it just came naturally to play. Sometimes you need to work a lot on the chemistry or on your tactics or what to do or how to cover the court. But I think with her, we jellied pretty well on court from the beginning. And I think that makes it easy to build on it after you start, or you don't have to work too much in trying to find a way to play. We just play our games naturally, and then it complements each other. So we played this whole year together. It was a good year. I'd say probably the best year in my career so far.
Wow.
So I hope for her too. I hope she enjoys.
Yeah, and that's saying a lot, you know, in the year of COVID, to say that it was your best year, like, most people can't say that, so congratulations.
Tennis-wise.
Oh, no, of course. No, of course, the tennis. And how has the support been from back home, from Brazil? You know, you made it to the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open. How much love did you get?
It was cool. It was very, very cool. To frank, the best week, the week that stood out the most was Lexington, because I think it was the only one of two tournaments happening in the world at the moment, two WTAs, I think, us in Prague, maybe? Anyway, so Lexington was a great week because we did well, we won the tournament, and it got a lot of attention in Brazil, a lot of hype, and I got a lot of messages, a lot of support, and I think it was great for Brazilian tennis and women's tennis especially. And even more so in doubles, because there was nothing else going on. I hate to say it, but because there was nothing going on at the time, it was good that we got a lot of attention and hype. And I think that's where it all started. And so we were able to back it up with other good results. And quarters of US Open, which was my first time playing there after juniors. So that was fun as well with all the conditions and the bubble, who nobody really knew if it was going to happen or how it was going to work out. And he worked out successfully to the most part. So I think it was cool. It was great. I'm still still getting a lot of love from Brazilian fans and Brazilian tennis right now. It was a good time.
That, and that never gets old. I'm sure you appreciate that. Before you went pro, you played all 4 years at Pepperdine. Do you regret it all, you know, doing all 4 years so you could have gone pro earlier? Or do you think that was key to your success?
I actually didn't go 4 years. I went, so I don't regret it, to answer your question. I did 2.5 years. I played 3 seasons and I stopped in 2018. To go play.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. The question would be, do you regret not finishing it?
There we go. So do you?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No, I'm fine. I'm happy with where I am. I mean, I'm sure I could have finished as well. I've thought about it before. But at the same time, I think it was the right decision when I took it. And I still stand by it. But I would definitely go back. I plan on going back and getting a degree. And even better, probably knowing more of what I would want to study later on, more than I would when I was there before. So I loved it. I loved all my 3 years there.
Two and a half, three years.
Yeah. I only want to give my hustlers the best of the best. So let me tell you about the light blue grip that does not slip. Torna Grip. When I first started competing in tennis, I would lose my racket everywhere. I'd play doubles and I'd hit my partner in the head with my racket. When I played golf, I would just lose my club. I played badminton and I lost my racket. I grip everything with Torna Grip. This grip has changed my life. It is literally the only grip that gets tackier as it gets wet. So perfect for my extremely sweaty palms. No one really knows what's going on there, but it works. It works so good. The blue color is trademarked, so you can see that iconic blue everywhere you go. I'm telling you guys, this is the best grip, and if you want to be the best tennis player you can be, you will use no other grip than the Torna Grip. You're welcome. Go get some and tell me how it works.
It's an interesting transition, you know, college tennis, you're with your team all the time, you're always with your coaches, you have like fans cheering you on. And so how can you just talk about your transition to the pro tour? Did you feel like it was a hard adjustment, maybe lonelier and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's definitely lonelier. I took a semester off before I stopped completely. So the fall of 2018, I was off, and I felt it was very different. I went to Europe to play tournaments, and I was with a group of girls traveling or playing tournaments in Spain and Belgium and other places, but I really felt the difference there. And after I left completely, it's a tough transition, but at the same time, it's a good reasoning. I think the toughest thing is to find a structure or to find a group and be financially stable and be able to do it all on the road. But I think the fact that I had Cedarbrook as a base, or always had it, it was a very comfortable. And I got a coach, the coach I'm with now, Sanjay, since I left. So I think that was very a good part of my transition that made it a lot easier for me than I assume for other people that don't have that, like, stability or that structure from the beginning. So I'm really glad and thankful that I always had that good setup, and that was helpful into my transition because I had more of a plan and things organized, let's say, from the very beginning that I left school.
Well, yeah, structure is totally important. Did you ever, you know, miss like maybe family and friends back home? You know, you're basically living out of your suitcase. How did you cope with that, you know, being away all the time?
Yeah, for sure. I love traveling, so I think that's the easy part of the tour for me.
Right.
I love the lifestyle, so that makes it a lot easier. I obviously miss my family. I missed friends in college when I left, but I'm so used to it by now that it's not something that holds me back. Let's put it that way.
Right.
I feel like I'm kind of independent in that way, but I love being around people or with my team. And sometimes when it gets too much, I would go back and visit if it's too overwhelming or something, but I rarely get to that point. So I'm glad I love the lifestyle, the traveling, and I don't suffer too much from being homesick.
Wow. You know, I've done a lot of these podcasts with different players, and I've not once heard someone speak about, you know, a lot of people say they love travel, but you sound the most independent and kind of relaxed about the process. What is your, besides, you know, competing in different cities, what would you say is your favorite part about the travel aspect?
I think meeting different people, like different cultures, not always in tennis, but even outside the tournament, or people from the tournament, see how people live in different countries, learning about their culture and how people are so similar, even if they're in another part of the world, but how they're also very different. I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Wow, I keep going into a lot of
more deep thinking here, but I think that's it about the seeing different perspectives and how people think and do things in other places, how the government runs their country in other places. It's so weird and different, but very cool at the same time.
Wow, that's a very deep answer. It's more like intellectual and culturally fascinating to you more than, you know, it's not surface level for you. You really learn a lot. You're fascinated.
Yeah, I think so. I love that part of it. I think when I come back home, it makes it more special to have those experiences firsthand. And so it's cool to share that with my family, my friends. But then that's when I miss them, because I wish they were there with me, like experience those kind of stuff, or just sharing those moments with me, especially when I'm happy and traveling and touristing or doing whatever. So I think that's when I miss them the most, more than wanting to come back home.
It's a great point.
That's how I see it, at least.
I want to go into your apparel. So you're sponsored by Tennis Warehouse, you and Haley, correct?
Yeah, they've been great. They're great, and they've always been great since the beginning. I played in Templeton, when was this, 2018 or 2017? And we got to visit the warehouse, and that's when we got in touch with the whole staff team, and they're all super nice, super helpful. And since then, we started talking, and then since then, we started a partnership, and we're hanging strong. They can help us. They help us wherever we are. I was glad we got some new gear. Now we're receiving new gear for the next year, some cool tops, and they honestly have everything any tennis player needs. So it's a great company to be partners with, besides being so helpful and so useful. Even in Europe, whenever we're struggling or we are far away and we didn't get something in time, or we need something urgently, then we also have the sister TW Europe in Europe.
Wow.
So it's honestly amazing.
Well, shout out to Tennis Warehouse. So we're going to wrap.
They're the best.
Yeah, we're going to wrap the podcast up with a little game.
Ooh,
right. So you're going to tell me the first thing that comes into your mind when I ask you these questions. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Louisa, what's your favorite city?
Barcelona.
Favorite Grand Slam?
Aussie.
Favorite activity to relax on the road?
Beach time.
Ooh, beach time.
If we have beach, yeah.
Swimming or sunbathing?
Nature. Let's just say nature. Preferably beach.
Right.
Swimming or tanning or just walking on the sand, anything. Ooh. Anything by the beach.
Sounds
coconut
really nice.
I don't know. Surfing, I mean, whatever. You name it.
Wow.
Whatever's on the water.
Would you prefer to have an early match or late match?
Early match.
Like 8 a.m. or like 11 a.m.?
Oh, 8 a.m. is fine. First on.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, 8 a.m. is usually, we don't get 8 a.m.s anymore.
Right.
Especially in doubles, I rarely get any 8 a.m.s. But first round, first match on is fine. 9, 10, 11, whenever that is. I think I'd rather have early early rounds.
Me too. I'm with you. What's your favorite pregame meal or snack?
Favorite would be tapioca, especially for breakfast. We have this tapioca dish in Brazil. It's very lean and just carb-full. It's a lot of carbs and with eggs. Just something, yeah, it's easy to digest and it's very good, tasty. And
I have to look it up. I've never heard of that.
Okay, I'll text it.
Okay.
I'll let you know. T-A-P-I-O-C-A, tapioca.
Tapioca. Okay, you got it. Would you rather meditate or journal?
Meditate. Sure.
Same. I'm a big meditator. Extra coffee or a nap if you're tired?
Tough. Both.
Both.
Take a coffee and nap.
Get a coffee and
nap. Does that work?
Or nap and then coffee. Coffee then nap. Yep, yeah. I like it.
Yeah, nap and coffee. Sounds good.
There is literally no better feeling than just waking up and drinking coffee. I don't think there's a better feeling in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm trying to get rid of my addiction. So slowly and gradually slowing down the caffeine.
I feel you. What's something you can't live without?
Family.
Oh, I like that. It's a good one.
Yeah.
What's something that makes you... Food, yeah.
To the second thing. There you go.
What's something that makes you mad?
I don't know. Not many things. Violence? Yeah, let's say violence.
Violence. But I like that. Coffee. That's good. Someone you want to be like or that you admire?
My grandfather.
Oh, why?
Oh, he's amazing. He's just great human overall. Learned a lot from him. Holds the family together. And my parents, too. I mean, I admire a lot of people, but I'd say grandparents, parents, and yeah, everyone. The family in general.
Yeah. Lastly, if you weren't playing tennis, what would you be doing?
Another sport.
Okay.
Maybe. I would guess. I don't know what I would be doing, but I think something to think about. But another sport.
Another sport.
Maybe a team sport.
A team, like soccer, yeah. Maybe?
I love playing soccer, but I don't think I would want to be a soccer player. Yeah, I'm not sure what I'd do.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think you'll have to switch.
Be a surfer.
Surfer?
I could surf properly.
Oh, yeah, because you...
Beach tennis. I would do beach tennis. That's what I would do.
You love the waves. You love the beach. Maybe beach tennis. Maybe surfing.
Yeah, mix it together. Yeah, I don't know. I think about it.
Yeah. Well, Louisa, that's all I have for you. Is there anything else, any wisdom you'd like to share or any last thoughts?
No, let's just say 2020 was a tough year, so everybody just hang in there. Let's keep grinding, keep hustling.
Yes,
on the hustle.
Yes,
and wishing everyone an awesome 2021 with lots of good things, peace, love, health, and tennis. Aww. And other good stuff too, and beach time.
And beach time. Yes, now you made me want to go on the beach. You've made me in the mood.
There you go.
Thanks,
always
girl.
Go to the beach. Don't ever hesitate.
You heard it here first, guys. Well, that was Louisa Stefani. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I want to apologize for some technical difficulties. It's amazing, like during our times of COVID, it's like we're so dependent on, you know, Wi-Fi and technology, really more than ever, even though we all are very dependent all the time, every day, 24/7. But it's like even now during this lockdown, but you know, times where we should not be going out, it's like, if the Wi-Fi is not working, why shall I live? No, I'm kidding. That was a bit dramatic. But it was really cool having Louisa on and to hear her perspective on doubles, how she will approach the new season, head to Australia, and even just to hear her take on, you know, two very solid singles and doubles players, Sabalenka and Mertens. So be sure to like and rate and review this podcast if you enjoyed it on Apple Music. If you have any questions or comments, please DM me at JulesElBaba at JulesElBaba on Instagram and Twitter, or email me at JulesOnTheHustlePodcast.com. Guys, it's already December 7th. This is crazy. We're almost approaching the new year. Next week, we have a special guest from Canada joining us. I will not say who, just to keep it a surprise. But to wrap up the year, we are going to have a nice and boring solo. No, I'm just kidding. It's not going to be boring. It's going to be interesting. It's not going to be a lot about tennis unless something, you know, dramatic or breaking news pops up. I am going to talk about two of the most popular podcasts in the world, the Joe Rogan Experience. If you listen to that podcast, you know what that voice was. And Call Her Daddy. Why are they successful? What are they doing right? What do they provide the audience with? And why is it just so damn addicting? Both of them. I listen to both. I'm not guilty of it. I learn a lot in both. But guys, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next Monday on Jules on the Hustle.
Every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling.